Yeah, g'day, mate. You're listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
We've got Ollie from Lime Cordial. How you doing?
Very well. Kia ora. Thanks for having me.
No worries at all. It's lovely to have you here. And we hear you've got a magpie for us as well.
Yeah, there's a magpie on the veranda here.
Yeah.
Having a nice thing. I'm surprised you guys can't hear it.
Yeah. But, fancy modern phone filters, obviously.
Yeah, very very vocal. Just wanted to do the interview with me.
Yeah, cool. And so for our audience here, you probably don't need too much introducing because y'all have played down here a few times to some great response. But for the students out there, could you give us a bit of a rundown of what Lime Cordial is?
Lime Cordial, a band from Sydney, Australia, sort of run by my brother and myself. You know, we, I guess, figured that if we started a band together as brothers, then it can't ever break up. So, you know, that's the plus side of being with your brother, unless you have a family feud and you're, you upset the whole family.
Yeah,
and,
family feud on stage.
Yeah, then it's all good. But yeah, I guess there's this new genre that I've only just been hearing about. Especially overseas, people are talking about Australian indie, and I'm like, what the hell is that? I don't know what that is, but that's the genre that we fit under, supposedly.
True, yeah. I guess that's it. When you don't know what the genre is, then you are it. You're living it. It's a lifestyle choice.
That's true.
And so what are some of your Australian indie influences? Like, what helps you guys write your music?
I reckon, you know, just influences from all over. I've never been one to kind of go like, I want to sound like this. And I think, you know, that should be healthy with anyone making music, you know, pull things from everywhere. Mm. And you don't want to go so far that you're plagiarizing, but I think that you can really go, hey, I really like that groove from this song and a bit of this kind of melody here and this instrumentation there. And then you sort of, because you're honing in on all of your favorite little pieces, you end up sort of creating your own style. I think it's kind of as simple as that, really. If you try and just sound like one act in particular, then maybe that's a bit more dangerous. But borrowing music, not stealing, borrowing.
Yeah, totally. And you've done a lot of borrowing. You've got a new, a whole new album out, which is, it's huge. It's like 17 tracks. That's really impressive.
17 tracks. I mean, some of those tracks are self-indulgent little audio pieces. But they're just little snippets that we created to sort of help the narrative of this album along. I can't remember how many songs we've got on there. Maybe 15 songs on there.
Yeah.
And it runs the course of a relationship. It tells the story of a relationship from beginning to end, really. And we sort of like to say that, you know, it starts off like you're strangers with someone, and then you move into friendship, and then you move into, from there, into lovers, from lovers to enemies, and then enemies back to strangers again, which is kind of the course of most relationships that you have with people in life, whether it's friends or lovers. You know, a lot of friendships and relationships end, and sometimes that's the beauty of it. But there's a big old story there, that's for sure.
Totally cool. And what inspired you to put like a whole narrative across what like otherwise is like, you know, some pretty catchy tunes that like sit on their own like perfectly well?
We didn't write the music to, like, fit within a concept. Mm-hmm. So I think if, you know, people keep asking, is this a concept album? I don't really know what a concept album is, but if that means that you're writing from the start to fit into a concept, then I don't think it's that. You know, we sort of were exploring as we were going. We were writing. Sometimes we were writing just because we felt like writing. And it's... because we're brothers, we wanted it to feel like, we're writing love songs, and sometimes we're writing love songs together, but we're not in the same relationships together. So we wanted it to just feel a little bit more relatable and feel like one relationship, even though each individual song comes from a different time, telling a bit of a different story. the whole story of the album is chronological and can feel like one story. So, I think, our second album, 14 Steps to a Better You, you know, the concept came right at the end of the process. And we go, hey, this is feeling like a bit of a self-help tape.
Yeah.
You know, right. And that's where we got the name 14 Steps to a Better You.
Mm-hmm.
14 tracks telling you what to do. Mm-hmm. It came a bit later. We wanted it to come a bit earlier. Mm-hmm. So that's why there's a bit more of a stronger narrative with this one.
Cool. And y'all have been like playing shows for a while now, doing a whole bunch of touring. You've made it down here a few times. How much do you find that like playing live affects the music that you write and what you feel like you are as a project? Do you see yourselves as a live band, as a recording band?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, we've been playing for so long. Like, our first few shows were in 2009.
Mm.
So, ages. We've been to, you know, New Zealand, I don't know how many times, so many times. I think, you know, live, if you're playing live, that's what can really support the band in a lot of ways when you're starting to fill up rooms. That's what helps bands financially, but it also just, that's what for us, we did it the old school way. Like, we never really had any huge radio support or nothing of ours has ever gone viral. Nothing's ever popped off. So it's always just been playing show after show after show. And even now we're trying to explore different territories around the world. And we just go back, and each time we go back, there's like another 100 people at this one, another couple of 100 people at that one.
Mm.
And it's just like word of mouth, playing the shows, doing the hard slog the old school way. But it's like, you know, the best way of making an impression on someone and winning them over and getting them to tell all their friends. So that's kind of the approach we've taken. You can't swipe up at a show.
Totally cool. I'm glad that that's sort of come through the hustle of playing a whole lot of music, and that's how you found your sound. It's really cool, and it does show in how far of audience you've managed to reach when you're saying that, you know, nothing's like, you know, blown up to a crazy extent, but you still just keep playing shows, and it is getting you places, like building up the audiences and stuff like that. And you can feel that down here. Like, we definitely have you definitely have some following and like quite a few people who are really into it and have loved the shows you played here before, which is always really awesome to hear about bands who do actively come down and tour and want to check out like not necessarily the bigger cities in Aotearoa and come and hang out with locals, and particularly like there's a huge scene of young people who love going to shows in Dunedin, and Dunedin has its own really awesome music scene that has a huge history as well. So could you tell us a little bit about what it was like playing music in Sydney growing up, and what the music scene there is a bit like as well?
Well, it's changed a lot over the years. You know, Sydney's been hit hard with a few things, like curfews came in, which meant that a lot of venues closed down because they weren't allowed to stay open after whatever it was, midnight or 11:30 or something. So that hit the music scene hard, and then COVID hit it again. It's pretty conservative, a lot of noise complaints and things like that, but there's still music coming out of Sydney, you know, and like there aren't as many venues as when we started, but live music is really important. Funny thing is, like, when you go overseas, when you go to America or something, that's when you really realize how good the quality is in Australia and New Zealand with music. And I'm not just saying that because it's, you know, I'm a bit patriotic or something. Like, genuinely, like, music, like, just per capita or whatever, however you measure it, it's like the quality of music comes out of NZ. It's so insane. You go to Los Angeles and you're like, oh, so much good music comes out of here. Pop into a bar of like a band that you've never really heard of and just poke your head in, and I guarantee it's probably going to be horrible. You know, it's just like, there's so much crap to sift through.
Yeah.
And obviously some of the best musicians are there, but like, man, I don't know if it's because we have, you know, tall poppy syndrome in Australia, and I guess you guys have it a bit there where we're all really judgy, and we're all like, everything's got to be cool, everything's got to be, you know, well, I mean, Unknown Mortal Orchestra is a good example. Like, I just saw them in Portugal, and they had a big video screen behind them, and they don't even have like a logo behind them. They've just got white noise. And isn't that just like doesn't that just sum up like New Zealand cool? It's just like, man, we don't even want to put our name up there. We just want to like just put white noise. Like, man, don't even want to promote your music. Like, you're playing in Portugal. Probably so many people here don't know who you guys are.
Yeah.
But like, nah, we're playing it cool, bro. We're playing it cool. And you're like, man, that's, yeah, it's like, it's amazing. And like, the funny thing about being in Sydney is like, I remember this point in our career when a few bands had come over to New Zealand to do shows, and there were bands like Ocean Alley and Sticky Fingers and people like that that just went over a bit, little bit before us, and we saw them on Instagram or whatever it was. It could have been Facebook then, but it was like photos of these huge crowds, and we're like, man, what's happening over there in NZ? Like, you don't even get those crowds here in Australia. And they're like, dude, go over to New Zealand, man. Like, they're just like, they love it. They just everyone just comes to shows. It's insane. And we're like, no way, we've got to get over there. So like, we did everything we could and like, you know, started going over and doing shows. But it's like, the crowds in New Zealand, it's like, if someone's making the effort to get over to NZ, then there's like this massive appreciation from the crowd. It's like, thank you. We need music. We want music. We love music. Yeah. So like, thank you. And it's like such a good feeling.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Hey, well, I really appreciate you coming on and getting to have a chat with us. It's lovely to hear all your yarns. We've got one of the new Lime Cordial tracks lined up, the big reveal, Oh the Hypocrite. Have you got any last words you could pass us on about that track?
We're wankers, so we made that name really long and hard for radio DJs to pronounce. But it's about a drama queen, like maybe sort of based on an actress or an actor that loves to bring the drama home with them. And it's quite a theatrical one, cranking organ solo because we wanted a bit of a.
Oh, you've cut out at the end there. Sorry, Ollie. We missed the end of that, but we caught that it was theatrical.
That's all you need to know.
Yeah, yeah. We skimmed through the track anyway. And we were loving it as well. We thought it was a great choice for the student radio down here. Loved some of that. So we'll chuck that on now. And yeah, really appreciate you joining us. It was a real pleasure to talk. Thanks, Ollie.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
See ya. And here we go. This is Lime Cordial with the big reveal, Oh La Hypocrite. Cool, yeah, thanks a bunch.
Seeds, that was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcast.